So a little introduction. My name is David Bush, B-U-S-C-H. My grandfather, that I got that last name from, was a POW from Germany at the end of World War I, incarcerated in the U.S. And at the end of the war, they gave him the option of going back to Germany or staying here. And he opted to stay here in the U.S. And my grandmother had, in 1896, her and her mother got him a covered wagon and left from Indian country in Oklahoma and came down to Texas. Her mother was half Creek and half Cherokee. And grandma was probably about five in 1896 when they came to Texas in the panhandle and started working the trail rides, the chuck wagon on the trail rides in West Texas. And she gradually made her way down to Southeast Texas, and they had my dad was their first child. It was her first child, and they had about six more. And so that's a little of my genetic inheritance. And my mother's mother was half Choctaw, and so I got that kind of stuff going from them. And both my grandfathers passed away before I was born. And so I grew up very close to my two grandmothers and my mom and my big half-sister. Thank you so much. And so my big half-sister left home at 13 and didn't come back. And my older half-brother, my roommate growing up, he left about 15 or 16 after a lot of mental health issues. And was a street person in San Francisco the rest of his adult life after being in a number of mental hospitals. And so left my little brother and I, my mom, with dad, which was interesting. So and on my grandma's farm, she had these three dirt floor shacks. And the rent was to help her with her chores. And she always had two or three great big pots on the stove. And they could eat out of that too. So they had food and a roof over their head and a dirt floor, a shack about 10 by 10. And so there was three of those. And so every time I went to grandma's farm, which was at least once a month, usually twice, I got to meet these people that are about as far off the beaten path as you can get, 10 miles of dirt road outside of Buena, Texas, which is pretty much in itself just a stop sign. So it was a rich childhood for spiritual growth and development and an exposure to so many different lifestyles and how brutal life can be and how glorious. And nature, my big half-sister taught me to just avoid dad, you know, just don't be home unless you have to. And so almost every day after school, I was fishing or hunting or just roaming in the woods. And to this day, nature's my, you know, go-to, and the garden, which is nature. And my animals, chickens, ducks, rabbits, honeybees, is nature. And so I owe so much to nature. I want to say also, just professionally, I taught fourth grade and 12th grade in the public schools, and I taught at the university level after I got my PhD for 13 years. And I've been helping children for 49 years, over 4,000 cases as a child psychologist. And I moved here 6 months ago to semi-retire. I'm getting licensed in North Carolina. I just got all that paperwork, fingerprint cards, all that kind of stuff mailed this week to the state licensing board, and transcripts from the 70s and all that kind of stuff taken care of. And so in a month or two, I should be licensed in North Carolina. And I'm going to just see six people a week for 2 hour, 120-minute sessions, and for in-depth psychotherapy, adolescents and adults, no more little ones. And so that'll be my retirement. I'm going to rent a little office in Franklin. If any of you know where there's a little office for rent, please let me know. And I've been married and have three children and two grandchildren, and am single. And I love organic gardening and orcharding and all that, and greenhouse and all that, growing tropical fruit in the greenhouse. So that's a little, just a little, for those of you, I see some unfamiliar faces and my new brother here. Welcome, it's good to see you again. And we had a pipe ceremony last night on the Niquasi Mound, which the Cherokee, by the way, call Niquisi Mound. After 1,000 years of prayer there, for about 150 years, there wasn't hardly any prayers, if any, on that mound. And we reopened that center of energy last night. We had 9 people there. And so anytime you want to go up on that mound and pray, be a real good thing to do. Just ask permission and of the spirits to protect that place and go up there and have a really powerful prayer. It's open and ready to be used in that way. And there's also right nearby there, one of the most incredible things I've seen, a little space about just a little bigger than this room dedicated to honoring women. And in a beautiful way, one of the most amazing sculptures I've ever seen there. And you can touch it. Would this side of the circle move your chairs about 8 or 10 inches back? Y'all move 8 or 10 inches back. We got one more person to squeeze in. And I still need that chair exactly opposite me empty. That's good. That'll probably do it right there. Thank you. Whatever. That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. There you go. That's perfect. Yeah. The reason I want the chair empty opposite me is that's for our ancestors. Any of our sweet, beautiful, loving ancestors, your spirit helpers, my mom and grandma, anybody that wants to come, there's the chair for you. And any other spirits that are in the area that just want to come and join the circle are welcome too, if you come in a good way. We love you. Ho, Wakantanka, great spirit. Wopatanka, Chichi, Pelatukasha, Pilamaya, you know. Please speak to me, through me, to these people over here, and say the words that will touch their hearts and help them to open and see how amazing they are and the next step they need to take in their unfoldment, better understand life. I'll be this hollow bone, and you speak through me and say what you know what's on their hearts better than I do. Thank you so much. Wopalatanka Chichi Pela Tukasha Pila Mahido Monsi Malia Tukasha How Mitakwe Oyasa. So it's so special to have an opportunity to sit here with each of you. And I want you to just pause for a moment and just realize just how miraculous it is that we find ourselves just sitting here right now with one another to share spiritually and be with one another in this way. With all the distractions going on in the world, each of you took the time to say, I'm going to go do something spiritual this morning. You know, I could bake that cake for the granddaughter, you know, or I could clean the car or mow the grass or whatever. You said, no, your mind threw up stuff like that. See, don't you think you ought to do this instead? And you people are guided by spirit, and mind is the servant of spirit. You have made the journey from the heart to the head. Give yourself credit. Late summer, we've been blessed with this cool weather, though it's unsettling. We know it's not supposed to be quite so cool in August, but I say might as well enjoy it and appreciate it and go with the flow like we always do, ride the wave. So I just got back from Sundance a couple of weeks ago. And when I go to a big ceremony like that, from the time I leave home, I'm on a spiritual sojourn, and I know I'm going to be used in a big way every step of the way. The first one was in 1996 when two different elders invited me to the same Sundance at Pipestone, Minnesota, the AIM, American Indian Movement Warriors Sundance. It was my first Sundance. And I just walked away from the ultimate financial security as a tenured professor at Valdosta State University in South Georgia, following Spirit's lead to move to the mountains of North Georgia, the land of my ancestors, the Cherokee ancestors before them, the Okmulgee Creek, Salagee. I was walking through the forest in the Cahutta Wilderness, wondering if I should, think about getting some land there. And it was dusk, and I was out dozens of miles from the nearest human. And all of a sudden, I was in an Indian village. I had all the auditory stimulation, but not the visual. And to my left, about 10 feet away, was a crackling fire with some men sitting around it having a quiet conversation. To my right, 10 feet away, was a group of women sitting on the floor doing some kind of handcraft, work and visiting, and just a casual visit, nothing special about it. And then all of a sudden, a group of children came running by me, laughing and running. I just stood there, just frozen, not wanting it to go away. But of course, it only lasted about maybe 30 seconds before it faded away. But I was in the village again and knew that I was supposed to at least buy some land there. And so then I started thinking about, well, maybe I should, retire, get a house and retire there. That was the next thing. And then it was, maybe I should rent an office and just see what happens. Because I've taught the graduate clinical classes on Tuesday and Thursday night at the university in South Georgia, and teaching people how to be therapists to 6 or 8 middle-aged adults, how to do therapy. Some of them were a little younger than that, but they were mature adults, graduate students. Really fun to teach. This is how you do therapy. That's what the two classes were. What a blessing. Had them do a lot of self-discovery writing and all, so I loved the teaching. I got the highest raise in the department of 15 faculty members, 9 of the 10 years I was there. It was the first person in the history of the department to get tenure on the first application, first to get promoted on the first application. So I was set there. We had a big house on a lake, 400-acre lake. We had 4 more years to have it paid for. And bought that lot next to the house where I had my garden and animals and orchard. We were set. I had a boathouse, bass boat, ski boat, sitting in the water there, ready to go. And I had a band called Dr. Dave and the Native Space Invaders. And it was really just taking off. I played and toured in a band in the 70s and loved music. My little brother was a full-blown musical genius. Full scholarship to college by 9th grade, playing a grand piano, concert pianist. And so music's always been a big part of my life. And so I was wondering about moving, then. And I asked for a clear sign. Have I told this story before? Okay. So I asked for a really clear sign to walk away from all that security and a social network. I was the local environmental spokesperson. With one phone call, I could have 50 people show up with signs at a city council or county commissioner meeting, and did many times. We were set. And the kids love living on the lake, of course. It's great. And I say, if I'm supposed to walk away from all this security, my dad's going to kill me, first of all, and mom's going to disown me if I survive dad's attempted murder. And because financial security was everything to dad, because he was the oldest in that family when his dad died during the Depression. So he has always put financial security above all else. And so I was running around the lake every Monday through Friday, 5 miles around the lake every morning. I ran the marathon and the Olympic pre-trials in 1970. So I was like a long distance series. Every day I run around the lake, you know, and I'm cruising along praying for a sign when a bald eagle flies down about from here to the back door there, perpendicular to my run, looking me in the eye as it flies by while I'm praying for a sign. And I say, yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I'm going to need one, you know, a little more clear than that. That might have been a coincidence. So I went home, showered, got in the car, driving northward to the university, 8 miles to work. And as soon as I pull out on the main road, this bald eagle flies down and flies over the hood of the car, like a hood ornament, you know, leading me northward. Probably the same bald eagle on a mission that morning, you know. And I said, well, that's a pretty good sign, but I'm going to need a 2x4 upside the head kind of sign, you know, to walk away from all this, you know. And so it came down to the last weekend. I signed the contract for over $50,000 for 8 months of teaching these two fun classes, you know, two nights a week, or resign. And the department head said, you will be blacklisted. You will never teach in the state of Georgia again, probably nowhere. You don't walk away from, we've given you everything you wanted, you know, including your office in a different building so you didn't have to be around the rest of the site department. Anything I wanted. Like, well, we'll see. I'll have to have a clear sign, you know. So I had boxed up a box of books. I'd been in Ekincar for a long time and was a high initiate in Ekincar and found one little tiny piece of dishonesty, which was enough for me. And I don't want that in my spiritual walk. And so I got out of that and I had all these boxes of books, you know. And I called a friend that was in Ekincar in Atlanta. I said, hey, how would you like a box of books and tapes and Paul Twitchell? He said, oh, yeah, sure. So I said, let's meet at this Mexican restaurant on Friday at 6. I'll give them to you. He said, okay. So the family and I get to this Mexican restaurant in the middle of Atlanta at 6 o'clock on Friday, you know, and it's just insane. I'm used to being on the lake, you know, quiet and all. And I'd hardly ever been in a big city, especially much when loud and all that. Cars going by just a few feet away. And the restaurant was closed for remodeling, and the parking lot was empty. And I had seen this just down the road there. I saw a Caribbean restaurant that looked really good. And my friend wasn't there yet. So I said, just go and take the kids down to that Caribbean restaurant, and I'll join you when he gets here. And so I'm standing just, you know, like a foot from the sidewalk. And just right there, you know, are all these cars blowing the horns and sirens and people on the sidewalk all just trying to get home quick as they can, you know. And I'm just taking all this in and imagining myself in a bubble, you know, peace and just observing it all. And I hear somebody whistling. Somebody's to my right, a couple of blocks away. I hear this. Somebody walking along whistling. I said, now there's a different attitude and somebody's got there, you know. And it came my way and it got to the corner like 100 feet away, and the whistler turned. They took a left and went a block that way, and I'm listening. I can still hear them. They went this way, then they came up this way, and then it started coming my way from the left. And I'm like, not only is this like a real happy person whistling, they're not going anywhere in particular. They're just out putting out good energy, you know, and everybody else is, I can't wait to get home and go numb again, you know, get my alcohol, my pot or whatever, you know. And he's just out happy bouncing along on the sidewalk. You know, here comes this, you know, little guy, you know, beard, look about my age, you know, short hair. And he glances at me. I said, hey, how you doing? He said, fine. He stops. And before he could say anything, up walks this about 6'6" Rasta dude, you know, with the dreadlocks and all. And he walked up, hey, how you guys doing? I'm fine, how you doing? You know? He says, what do you do to this guy? Now, this is word for word what was said. This guy says, I'm a gardener. Oh, I've been a gardener since I was 5. 71 now. And I started to jump in. Oh, I know all about that. You know, but I heard this distinct feeling, you know, shut up and listen. Here's a sign you've been looking for, you know, just shut up and listen. So he says, yeah, how big is your garden? He says, well, I'm in an apartment right now, but I'm going to get some land and get back into gardening as soon as I can. He says, yeah, wouldn't that be nice? And there was a pause, and just kind of looked up at the sky, you know, what you could see of it, and it's kind of getting a little color to it, you know. It was just really nice. And there's all this chaos right there, and they joined me in my bubble, you know. And he says, yeah, a garden, that's going to be so nice. And he says, yeah, a garden in some green mountains. He says, yeah, a garden in some green mountains with a creek going by. He says, yeah, a garden in some green mountains with a creek going by. A house on the other side of the creek. And he says, yeah, it was smoke coming out of the chimney. Wouldn't that be paradise? He says, yeah, wouldn't that be paradise? Then the tall black guy looks me right in the eye. He says, you know, I'd give up any kind of security for a place like that. I said, brother, so would I. Wow. I said, you guys may not know it, but you're walking a good path with spirit because it brought you here today. It brought you here today to answer a big question for me. And I told him all about it. We hugged each other. They went to walk in opposite direction. You know, he says, now you're going to find that place. I said, yeah. And he said, and you buy it. I said, I will. I turned in my resignation on Monday. So that was clearly a statement from the heart to the mind. Spirit's in charge here. You're subservient. You're going to be a beautiful servant. Think how good you're going to look when you tap into all this infinite connectivity I've got. And that's an appeal to the ego like that, to let go. Maki Ruka, one of my elder teachers, was from the Maui people of New Zealand, told me the journey from the head to the heart is a long and arduous journey, but not near as long and arduous as the journey from the heart back to the head. So here I was, you know, on the edge. You know, I had rented an office. I left that out. I rented a little office in Ellijay, Georgia. And the calendar was full Friday, Saturday, Monday. And then I would drive back down there on Tuesday, teach Tuesday, Thursday night, drive back up Thursday night, see people Friday, Saturday, Monday. And it filled up in no time because I'd forgotten. I'd spoken at all the school counselor conferences, and all the school counselors knew me. So when they knew I was in the area, the calendar filled right up, you know. And in 29 years of being in practice there, I never had an opening on the calendar and never spent a dime on marketing. I've seen over 4,000 children. So that was a beautiful decision, and that is exactly what we manifested there. We have 55 acres adjoining in the National Forest, big creek going through the property, big beautiful house, big beautiful organic garden, orchard, greenhouse, shop on the other side of the creek, exactly as they described. Though there are days when there's no smoke coming out of the chimney. Oh. Well, we still got a place for sale there. Yeah, you're thinking Ellijay, North Carolina. Yeah, I found out just recently there's an Ellijay not far from here. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Pardon?
Just down the road.
Yeah. So these two elders invited me to the same Sundance, right, at all this going on, you know. And I rented an office there, and I slept in the office, and there were two rivers met right behind my office, the Ellijay and the Kartikey Rivers meeting from the Kusawati right there. And I was swimming in the rivers, bathing in the rivers, fishing in the rivers there, you know. And the first person that walked through my office door was a Cherokee grandmother bringing her granddaughter to me. She sat down. She said, you know your office is where the Three Rivers Council was held each year, right? had been like that ever since, you know. And so the family, it was the day before school started when we said, let's go for it, you know, let's move. And so she drove up with the kids, my wife, with the kids in the van. A door wouldn't shut. The side sliding door wouldn't shut. I said, get the duct tape. You know, she said, okay, I'm out of here. She didn't really like living in South Georgia very much. And so she was ready to go, you know, and came up. And I was sitting in front of my office on the sidewalk with a little camper stove and a pot of beans cooking when they got there, ready for them, you know. And then I found a cheap motel for them. And the very next day, I was gone to the Sundance. And saying, use me, like I am right now, use me, you know. And so the flight from Atlanta to Minneapolis, there was a fellow, a grandfather, whose grandson had been diagnosed with ADHD, which was my subspecialty. And so by the time we landed in Minneapolis, he knew everything he needed to know to make sure his grandson got top quality care and how to make it happen. And he gave me the ride out of Minneapolis to get on the road. And Minneapolis is over here on the east side, and Pipestone's in the southwest corner. And all the roads in Minnesota are like on a grid like that, you know, north, south, east, west. And there's no major road that goes down there. So it was every ride I got was somebody with spiritual questions to be talked about. One real religious young man put me out 3 times. Yeah. I said, you remind me so much of myself. I was still teaching Sunday school in the First Baptist Church of Nederland, Texas when I was 21. So I understand everything you're saying, where you're coming from. But let me tell you what's happened since then. That was 21 was when I first stumbled upon Sedona, long before it was well known. And I worked on a spiritual site there and was there when the Hopi stone, for those of you who read the Hopi survival kit, I was there when we found one of the big chunks of that stone. Hopi elders showed up 2 weeks later saying, I think you have something that belongs to us. I go to that Sundance then. Oh, yeah, there was a woman who gave me the last ride to the motel in Pipestone. There's a city called Pipestone there right near the mine where the Sundance was. And she said, well, aren't you going to take me in your room? And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, don't you want to take me in your room? You know, and I said, I'm married. I don't cheat on my wife. And you shouldn't be offering yourself like that to a stranger. You don't know me. You know, no telling what might happen. And I could tell she had had a hard life, you know. And she started crying. Never been respected like that, she said. I said, yeah, well, don't settle for anything less. And it's just been a journey like that ever since. At the Sundance, it poured down rain after Clyde Belcourt, the head of AIM, lit the fire. He and I were there putting up, oh God, there's so many things I could talk about. Like, it was just crazy, the whole thing. Where like the elder, one of the elders who invited me, I called him 2 days before I left saying, what can I bring? And he said, bring the 4 direction flags. I said, how big? He said, 5 yards by 9 yards each. I said, I'm hitchhiking. He said, yeah, bring the 4 direction flags. 4 yards by 9 yards. I said, I don't sew. He said, yeah, bring the 4 direction flags. It'll happen. Yeah. 2 days later, my backpack's just filled up with those 4 directions. That's all I had room for in the backpack. But I found a lady that actually sewed them, and, you know, it all worked out. But I went with the clothes I had on my back and nothing else. And like I said, Clyde and I set up the first teepees, and I'd never set up a teepee before. And there were 4 or 5 big ones, and then Dennis Banks came and helped with that. And so I got to know the leaders before anybody else got there. And I was just accepted then by everybody else that came. And Clyde lit the fire on the beginning of the 4 days of purification before the 4 days of dancing. And it poured rain that night, and the fire went out, and Clyde really lost it. You know, he's like, really, technically, this ceremony is supposed to be over with if the fire goes out. You know, I'm going to light it again, but if it goes out again, we're all going home. And the next night, nobody was taking care of the fire. And I'd spent the whole day splitting firewood. And so I took care of the fire. And again, it rained all night. Next night, again, it rained all night. I took care of the fire again, kept it from going out. I made like an igloo pile of firewood with one opening for the air to get into the fire in the middle of it. And then tree day came, you know, to put the tree up, go get the tree and put up the tree. And the next day, dancing started, and the fire keepers still hadn't shown up. And they had four great big lodges, 65 dancers. And just me taking care of the fire and having to keep the rocks hot for the lodges. First lodge is at 4 a.m., last lodge about midnight. All 65 dancers had to sweat, you know, before the dancing and after the dancing. And I had made a commitment to fast with the dancers. So I fasted while I was tending the fire, even though people said that's not possible to do. And they made me the head firekeeper at the first Sundance I went to, having no idea what to do in that role. I attended fire at a lot of sweat lodge ceremonies, but I'd never even been to a Sundance. And the intercessor, the spiritual medicine man for the dance, told me to be the firekeeper. Because it was the end of the first day of dancing, and the firekeeper hadn't shown up. And he said, you be the firekeeper. I said, this is my first Sundance. I don't know what to do. He said, yeah, well, you do it. You're the firekeeper. And a Sundance chief, after that whole experience, I told him the story I just told you, and he said, just a minute. He was silent for about a minute. He came back and said, your name is Tatanka Iyanka, Running Buffalo. You went into that space not knowing anybody but the elder invited you, and you accepted that critical role of being a firekeeper for that huge Sundance, one of the biggest of all, with 1,000 Lakota and Ojibwe supporters. And you handled it with integrity and did the very best you could. So Spirit tells me your name is Running Buffalo. I've been given four names by the elders. That was the first one. So I've been blessed to be able to walk on this path. And so I want to pause for just a second and do a little spiritual air cleaning here. Not that it's necessary, but I'm going to do it. The Cherokee people burnt cedar, and the Cherokee people burnt cedar, this, and the Plains Indians burned sage, because that's what's abundant where they live, and those are their medicine plants for purifying, clearing the air. So since we're here, I'm in the Lakota way, I combined it. Just a little bit, and I'm not going to smudge people. I'm just going to let it fill the room with just a light little bit of smoke. It's not going to make anybody cough or anything. One time I had an elder come to the elementary school and do a teaching in the auditorium, and he just kept burning sage over. Just kept it going until the kids started coughing, and then they got to cutting up with it, you know, being funny. And it was going all through the HVAC system of the school. And it smelled like marijuana. They didn't invite me back. So on the way to Sundance this time, a couple of weeks ago, I was always curious as to what was going to happen, you know. Saw you waving at that. what was going to happen with that, you know. And so my GPS going through, I went over the over the Cajada Mountains and towards Dalton and into Dalton to start with. And I knew I should stay on 52 and to get on 75 north to Chattanooga. And but my GPS told me to keep going straight into Dalton. And so I immediately was like, is there somebody I'm supposed to meet? You know, this is strange. GPSs often take me on wild goose chases, so I didn't know what it was, whether it was one of those or what, you know. And so I'm going through town, you know, on a kind of residential street, but kind of a main street too. A few stop signs, you know, and then there's a gas station. So I think, well, I'm not going to trust this GPS. This don't look right, you know, because the highway went that way back there. And I go in this gas station about 11:30 p.m. and driving my 93 F-150 to Oklahoma from here. And there's an Indian, Far Eastern Indian guy, you know, behind the register there, a young man. And we looked into each other's eyes, you know, and I felt the connection, you know. It's like, oh, how are you doing? He said, oh, fine. I said, I don't guess you have any maps, do you? He said, no. I said, well, could you do a GPS on your phone, you know, and check and see if it agrees with mine? I think mine's messed up or something. He said, where are you going? I said, Oklahoma. And he says, oh, okay. And so he brought his up and it showed, you know, should have stayed on the highway, you know. And I was like, isn't that interesting? You know, it told me to come this way. And maybe it was just so we could meet. And we had this long look in each other's eyes, you know. And he followed me out to the car. You know, you sure you don't want to buy anything or visit some more or whatever? I said, no, I got a long journey and got to get back on the highway. And we just, the whole thing was like that bubble effect, like it was, you know, in Atlanta, the middle of Atlanta at that time. We both knew it, though, you know. And it was so magical, you know. And then I was trying to find the halfway point, you know, and the halfway point just happened to be right at the convergence of the Ohio and Mississippi River. And there's a state park there called Fort Defiance. And it was the halfway point. So I said, well, that's where I'm supposed to spend, you know, some time. I didn't want to drive my truck in the hottest middle part of the day because that's when it'd be more likely to have a problem. So I was driving all night, you know. And so it was early morning when I got to Fort Defiance State Park, which is the least developed state park you'll ever find anywhere. There's one little trailer there that some attendant lives in, I guess. But though there was nobody there, there was one car at the convergence of the two rivers there, and a couple standing in front of it, you know. So I get out, and I walk up to him and say, hey, how you doing? You know, and the guy clearly has an accent, you know, European accent. And I'm like, where are you from? He says, Germany. So, of course, I told him about my ancestry and all, you know, and he was like, we were supposed to meet. That's what he said, you know. We were supposed to meet. This is a very spiritual place, you know, with the Ohio River right there and the Mississippi River right there, a meeting right there, you know. And I said, yeah, it's a very spiritual place. My first time. Mine too, he says, you know. And so I said, well, I just came here to make a prayer down at the convergent point there, you know. Would you like to join me? He said, yes. Yeah, so we went down, and he had never prayed with tobacco in his hand before, you know, and all. And he was standing behind me while I was standing there at the convergent point, you know. And it hit me as soon as I started praying that there were a bunch of spirits around us, you know. And I was like, all your prayers for all those years, you people, my ancestors, native people, came here to pray. And I want you to see your prayers are answered, because here I stand now with tobacco in my hand praying like you did. We're still here because of what you sacrificed to keep those ways alive. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And that's a really amazing place. Two rivers a half mile across coming together, making a three-quarter mile across river. It's really powerful. And then right when I got off the highway, it was late afternoon, late early evening the next day when I got off the highway to go to the Shawnee Reservation in northeast Oklahoma where the Lakota Sundance was held there. And there was a coffee shack, you know, they had the little portable buildings, you know, now that they sell coffee at and all, you know. And I don't drink coffee, but I thought they might have hot chocolate or something, you know. And so I had this nudge pulling there, and there was a little line, you know, there was three cars in front of me. And so I thought, this must be good, you know. And so I see they got the menu before you get to the window, you know, and they had a mushroom drink, you know, adaptogenic mushrooms. So I thought, oh, that'd be good. That'd be good. They called it muddy water. I said, okay, that sounds good. And so I come up to, and this radiant young lady comes, this big smile on her face, just full of life and love and joy, you know, comes to the window to take the order. When I ordered the muddy water, she said, nobody ever orders that. That's my favorite drink, you know. And she was all fired up and happy, you know, and good choice. And so while she's fixing it, I look and I see this little dream catcher that Barbara Vitale had given me to take with me to the Sundance. And she said, I don't know why I'm being told to give this to you, you know, but maybe you're supposed to hang it on the tree or something. I don't know. And so I look at it and she comes back, you know, with my drink and all. I said, would you put some chocolate in there? And she said, oh yeah, sure. You know, so she put some chocolate in. Good idea. Okay. And so I said, I want to give this to you. You know, this 88-year-old grandmother gave this to me and I'm on the way to Sundance and I want to give that to you to use. You can handle your bad dreams. You're a strong woman, I can tell. But you can also just look at it lightly when you got a big decision to make or something bothering you, you know. You can just look at it lightly and help you sort out what you need to sort out. And so it can help you like that. And she was just so appreciative. She got it, you know. So I know from now on when I go to a Sundance, I'm going to have several little gifts like that to just have more moments like that, you know. And then on the way back, I had decided not to go to the convergence of the Ohio and Mississippi, but the GPS took me there anyway. And so I said, okay, so I'm supposed to meet somebody here, you know. So I got out, and the only people there were the yard mower guy, you know, was mowing. And they have a three-level observation deck thing there made out of cement. And it had spray paint on it, you know, from a lot of people, a lot of years, you know. And I began to look, and about two-thirds of the spray paint things were like Grandpa, 1988, you know, in memory of Mom, you know, stuff like that. And I was like, oh, this is a place where people come to honor their ancestors. That's what this place was for. That's what they came here for. It's still got that energy. So I went up on the top of the observation thing by myself and opened up the sacred Chinupawaka, the pipe, you know, and had my pipe ceremony. And two motorcycle riders came up there, and it was an opportunity for them. You know, they come up there, got this blanket, pipe laid out there, you know, loading the pipe. I said, hey, how you guys doing? Oh, fine, you know. I said, I'm just about to make a prayer here, you know. You're welcome to join me if you like. This guy stiffens up and says, I pray every day. I said, oh, that's great. Good. Well, if you want to join me, you can. No. Okay. Well, he didn't say it like that. He said, no, thanks. And so it was an opportunity for him to loosen up a little bit and learn a deeper way, maybe to pray from his heart more, and which he passed on, you know. So just that was enough to offer that opportunity to somebody. And then I packed up, was getting in my car when a guy showed up with a travel coach about the size of yours. And this guy gets out. He's got kind of long hair, you know. I said, oh, so maybe this is another opportunity here, you know. So we talk a little bit, and I said, say, I've already made a prayer, but I'd be happy to make another one with you if you like, you know. I was at a Sundance yesterday, which ended, you know, day before yesterday, and I'm on my way home, and I said, Sundance, huh? I said, yeah. He said, well, you know, I said, if you got something serious you want to pray about, I'll load it again for you. He said, well, in 2 weeks I'm having an aortic valve replaced, and I'm real worried about it. I said, oh, let me get my pipe. And so we had a beautiful hour-long talk and ceremony, you know. So life is this never-ending love story with no beginning and no ending. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of your life and talking with you today and letting us all feel that loving energy together. Thank you again to the ancestors that kept these ways alive through trials and tribulations we can only imagine. Ho, Takria, Oyasi.